بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. These are extracts and statements of our elders. In every zamana, every era, the leading people in that era, they quoted their elders. You look at the imams in hadith, Imam Abu Dawud sahab, Imam Tirmidhi sahab, Imam Bukhari, Imam Muslim sahab, rahmatullah alayhim, they also quote the elders. Someone is familiar with the kitabs, will find that these people quote the elders. We'll find in places Imam Tirmidhi saying, Qala Abu Isa, that this person said this. And then you'll find the same prevailing in Bukhari Sharif. Imam Bukhari will say, Qala Hammad Kada, that Hammad says so and so. And then he'll say, Qala Ibrahim Nakhai Kada, Ibrahim Nakhai says as such. So whoever was regarded as their akabir and their elder, they quoted them. To impress upon us that you will learn religion and you will learn deen from your elders. Imam Bukhari sahab rahmatullahi alayhi, in the second volume of his kitab, he says, نَقْتَدِي بِمَنْ قَبْلَنَا وَيَقْتَدِي بِنَا مَنْ بَعْدَنَا. He quotes Sufyan Thawri. Sufyan Thawri is also amongst his elders. So he quotes, نَقْتَدِي بِمَنْ قَبْلَنَا وَيَقْتَدِي بِنَا مَنْ بَعْدَنَا. We follow our elders and our juniors follow us. We follow our elders and our juniors will follow us. So he's laid down the rule that this is how it goes. You want to access the hadith directly, and you want to access the kitabs directly and understand, get the full understanding, then it's feared that you will not get that true and proper understanding. Without the assistance of the elders that had acquired it from the elders and so forth and so on, you want to directly access these things and then apply it to your situations, and it's feared that you will not be able to understand it in true context. To understand the context, then you need to get it from these elders. Otherwise, there can be a wholesale confusion. One person, some 10 years ago, I was seated in this masjid, and he was about to leave for Umrah, like how it is customary, Ramadan people go and spend there. So I was seated here and he came to meet me, old friend, very educated, very wealthy. So he came and met me, make dua for me, I'm going for Umrah, mashallah, jazakallah. Thanks for coming and convey my salams, make dua for me as well. So he says, Mawlana, I got one question to ask. What's the question, bhai? So he says, Mawlana, I got so many 10, 15 years of qaza namazes uncompleted. So what I thought of is I'll go to Makkah and I'll read my namazes there, qaza namazes there, and some namazes there. And because the rewards in Makkah Mukarramah are multiplied 100,000. So if I read one Fajr namaz, it multiplied 100,000. So all my qazas will be knocked off in that way. So he was serious about it. He wasn't joking, he was quite serious about it. So I told him, you know what, bhai, according to that principle, you not only knock off the past, but you'll clear up the future as well. Because if you want to perform, say, two rakats of namaz, two namazes there, two fajrs, then 200,000. 200,000 how much? Now just imagine, just start calculating, all the past will be cleared, all the future will be cleared. You don't have to perform any namaz. And based on the same principle, you just keep 1 month of Ramadan, Roza there, for the rest of your life you don't need to fast then. Because everything is multiplied 100,000. So now he understood it. No, I made a mistake. So then I explained to him what is the meaning of the hadith. See, that is why we need our elders who will explain to us the hadith in the true context, true meaning of the hadith, will explain to us. So I explained to him that this is only with respect to sawab. You get so much of sawab. You're not absolved of the obligation. An obligation is a different thing. And the reward is a different thing. You'll get this reward, but you're not absolved of the obligation. One woman, Umme Ma'abad, this hadith comes in Bukhari Sharif, she asks Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam some things about going for Umrah, etc. Or Rasulullah sallam asked her that, why didn't you join us in the Hajjatul Wida? So she gave some excuse that the husband was out or something and she couldn't manage coming out for the Hajj. So then Rasulullah explained to her that Umratun fi Ramadana ka hajjatim ma'i. Umratun fi Ramadana ka hajjatim ma'i. That if you do the Umrah in the month of Ramadan, then you will get a sawab that is equivalent to making Hajj with me. Then it is equivalent to making Hajj with me. Ka hajjatim ma'i. It is equivalent to making Hajj with me. Now, you just look at the external apparent meaning of this hadith. If someone went and made one Umrah in the month of Ramadan, does he need to make Hajj now? Doesn't need to make Hajj now. The obligation of Hajj is over now. So just make one Umrah in the month of Ramadan. Not only will he get a Hajj sawab, but Hajjati Ma'i, Hajj with Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Now the importance to understand the hadith as per the guidance, instruction of your elders. And it is the system of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that every science, you will have to learn it from the elders. You're learning engineering then from the elders. You're learning medicine from your elders. Architecture from them. So then you're well grounded. Apart from you being well grounded, people have the confidence in you. If you did self-studies in medication, etc., people don't have the confidence. But it's a chance now. We don't know. They call it a quack. Quack, they call it. Quack is, he's not a doctor, but he's just practicing, so they call it a quack. So people won't have the confidence, so he has to go in this sequence. He has to learn it from his elders, from someone that is bona fide and qualified, and that person has to take it from the one that was his senior, and so forth and so on. Now people have the confidence, and they will go up to him. But if he didn't follow this procedure, he went direct, access the books on medication, then nobody will accept him. They won't have that desired amount of confidence in him. So these are all quotations, more or less, of our elders, right? So that it will help us, it will aid us to understand deen in the true context. Many a times people make misleading statements. See, misleading statements, like people say, for example, that you left Rasulullah SAW and you're following Abu Hanifa. So now this is a misleading statement. It's an unqualified, incomplete statement. It says, yes, we do follow Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi, not that we consider him to be any senior to Rasulullah SAW, but the fact that he understood Rasulullah SAW more better than all of us. He understood Rasulullah SAW like how Imam Shafi or the Imams of Hadith, Imam Bukhari, they understood Rasulullah SAW better than we understood. So we depend on and rely on their understanding. Based on the understanding of Rasulullah SAW, we follow them. Now we try and understand him directly, we won't have that ability to understand directly because they were close and they had seen, their teachers had seen, or their teachers' teachers had seen Rasulullah SAW. So they understood the exact context of a hadith. And the context is very important, a simple illustration, simple example. If you apply your minds, you'll find a lot of things just in context, you see. Like someone is shouting for water, water, right? Now, there can be different contexts for this type of a scream, this type of a proclamation, water, right? Right? A house is burning and they're shouting water, right? So he's going to call for the fire brigade, he'll bring buckets of water or he'll bring a hose and he'll try to do something, right? Water. Context, look at the context. Now, someone is in your lounge, and he says, water, please. So you'll get to the fridge, nice, cool, refreshing water, you'll go and present it to him. Someone is in the toilet, water. So you don't want to get it in the tumbler, obviously. Now you'll get a jug, and you'll think perhaps that water is just closed now. Perhaps something happened, and the taps or the pipes are burst, and the water flow, there's no flow of water, so he's stuck, poor chap, in the toilet. So you'll go and pass a jug of water. So according to the context, now you will apply yourself, Acha, I understand the context that he is in, and therefore he's crying out for water. But minus the context, then will you understand? You will not understand. He's shouting for water and he's sitting in the lounge. You don't know the context. Now you go and give him water in a jug that's used for the toilet. Won't he feel humiliated? Won't he feel embarrassed? So these are simple things, but just that we don't tend to use our minds. Well, that is one understanding. The second thing we need to understand is, you see, a simple way for many people, most people, is that we need to see and look at those people that are committed to deen in that zamana, in that era. They are committed, they got one system. You can see it's a consistent way, they are secure, they are not chances, they are not suspects, and they have got a consistent system. Right through, they've got a consistent system. So when you see these type of people, now you feel the confidence. Now that's the elders, ulama, righteous people, they've got one pattern. So that's a simple, easy, and very, very correct system to follow. The elders, the great people, people that have got a consistent pattern, what is their way, what is their line? You follow that, generally, 99% of the time, you are correctly guided. But you fail to follow that, obviously, then you're going to put yourself into problems. I remember when we were in Myanmar studying there, so there was a famous court case going on. Someone had brought a movie of Rasulullah Paksam Na'uzu Billah. So the ulama kiram were not for it. Because a movie, etc., this is an entertainment. It's an entertainment. And then we don't want to reduce our Rasulullah Paksam to that level where it becomes a thing of entertainment. Laugh, entertainment, joke, etc. We hold him in esteem and respect. So the greater the esteem, and the greater the respect, the greater the affinity and bond, we'll hold him in that. Our children will hold him in that esteem and respect. But he comes onto the movies and the cartoon, etc., then the respect is lost, like how the prime ministers of this day, any part of the world, then you can make a mockery of them, draw a cartoon of them anywhere, in the toilet, in the newspapers, wherever. See, the people don't have the respect for them. So respect is an integral part of our religion. So they had stopped it, that no, this is not to come. There was a big case that was going on, and unfortunately there were some Muslims that were supporting it. Some Jumal chapels are supporting this thing here. Our ulama were against it. So anyway, the case had gone on, and as the case was running, so the ulama brought up the subject of pictures of animate objects. That's also forbidden. So the claimant, that was Jumal and his company, they asked, all right, where's the proof for that? So ulama explained the hadith, that the hadith is the proof for it. So they said, na'uzu billah, that the hadith is suspect. All right, now it's court. Now court, you can't use emotions, you need to use arguments. So they are now the defendant. When they become the defendant, they made a counterclaim, all right, if you say it's suspect, all right, we request Mr. Jumal to perform 2 rakats of namaz, the proper way, from the beginning, how you're going to do your wuzu, and right till the end. First, he hesitated and he wasn't too keen, reluctant, but now it's a judicial order that perform 2 rakats of namaz. Namaz is a criteria, it's a standard. Do you accept? He said, yeah, it's a criteria, all right. If you claim that you're an authority, then you can speak on religion, then you must comply and conform to the standard. So show us the procedure of salah. So he started off, get the water, wash the hands first, to the wrist, and then gargle the mouth, make miswak, etc., whatever else. So they asked him, where is this in the Quran? Where is this in the Quran? So now you're stumped. He said, no, this is from the hadith. Just now you said the hadith was suspect. So just now you say the hadith suspect, and then you're applying the hadith. So you are a suspect. The court said, I remember the words. The court said that you are a suspect, not the Quran and not the hadith. So you see, in every zamana and every era, there were that group, there was that group that stood in the defense of the truth. And an easy criteria is to go by the elder ulama of that era, that zamana, those that have a consistent pattern, at least for 30 years, on consistent, straight way they have got, so you go with them. 99% of the time, inshallah, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, you will not be lost. Like you want to go to a doctor, you won't go to someone that is recently qualified or he's got a history or an experience for 25, 30 years. No, he's good. Don't you do that. you go for legal advice, now someone is in the profession for some time. Salim Khan or whatever else, Harun Khan or someone, or he's in the profession for so long, all the cases that he takes, mashallah, he comes out very well with those cases. So you take the cue and you carry on. Why? He's got some history, he's got some experience, and you see his record, his track record, you see it and you feel very confident about it. So the same principle and standard we apply in our dunya matters, can't we apply the same thing in our deen? So I had to give this introduction. Generally in this day and time, we disregard our elders. We don't think much about them. But I feel it's impossible, it's very difficult for a person to go and access the hadith straight. Like I just showed you two situations, you will complicate yourself. You will not know. Look at the hadith now. Look, I'll show you three, four contradictory hadiths that come in Muslim, Abu Dawud, Bukhari Sharif, and Tirmizi. Right now, these three, four hadiths come. And now, how are you going to find a reconciliation? You're coming into the masjid. There is a hadith which says, إِذَا رَكَعَ فَرْكَعُ. When the imam goes into ruku, then you go into ruku. That's one hadith, right? But contrary to the hadith, there's another hadith that says, لَا صَلَاتَ إِلَّا بِفَاتِحَةِ الْكِتَابِ. That namaz is not valid without Surah Fatiha. Now imagine someone pulls into the masjid just at the time the imam sahib went to the ruku. What is he to do? If he goes into ruku, then he is leaving out the hadith which says that namaz is not valid without the Surah Fatiha. And if he engages in the recitation of the Surah Fatiha, that is going against the hadith that when the imam goes into ruku, then go into ruku. Now what are you going to do? It's such a confusion now. You don't know where to turn, this way or that way. Now these imams will come, those that had seen Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, etc., directly, indirectly, between them and Rasulullah is the ustad, is the teacher, they will tell you, all right. What you do, see the hadith in context. Look at the hadith in context. When you say the namaz is not valid without Surah Fatiha, this refers to the imam or the person that is performing namaz individually. Now you understand the context, it refers to the imam or the person that is performing namaz individually. Like you say, for example, that there is no Jummah without the khutbah. La Jumu'ata bila khutbah, right? The Jummah is not valid without the khutbah. Imam just went onto the musalla and started reading two rakat of Jummah namaz without performing the khutbah. What will you say? That the namaz of Jummah is not valid. But then, does it mean that every person must recite the khutbah? No. The khutbah will be recited by the imam. Similarly here, everybody doesn't recite the Surah Fatiha. It's the imam that recites it, or the person that is performing namaz individually, he will perform and he will recite the Surah Fatiha. Right? Now this is the Hanafi explanation. There will be other explanations, but a simple Hanafi explanation. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullahi also says the same thing as we are saying. So you see, without the intermediary of these people here, you can't go directly. Now, people that are doing this self-study, going to the computer, nobody stops them. But then have the right tools, have the right type of assistance, and then go into this thing here. You don't have the right tools, then you rather just stick onto your simple kitabs, the Fazail, Amal, Bersizawad, etc. That's a guide. That's enough to take you across, inshallah. Why must you act so clever now? I'm super intelligent, and I'm a rocket scientist. I need this book, I need that book. You won't be able to make out simple things. You won't be able to make out. You will add to your confusion. Before you were doing things, now you will leave out things. You know, but there's hadith here, there's another hadith here. What must I act upon? Must I leave this, and must I do this? If I do this, then where's the proof? And if I don't do this, then where's the proof for me not to do this? Then what must I do? So whatever he was doing, whatever he was practicing, that also he'll leave out. See? So sometimes people go on that end. Sometimes then they look for convenience. See, every human being has got a conscience. And the conscience will hurt you. Right? It will hurt you. So you look for convenience. A road of convenience. A road that you will feel mentally appeased. Was the Mughal dynasty in that period, you know, in that era, and one woman was caught for fornication. So she was charged, right? She had to appeal in court. Islamic law, she must be stoned to death, and that's the law, the system. And we honor the system. We don't think, why did Rasulullah institute such a thing? And by the way, all the divine books, all the revealed books say the same thing. If you look at the Torah, it says the same thing. The famous hadith of Bukhari and the Abu Dawud Sharif, this hadith is quoted that this is contained in Torah. It is contained in the Torah. Right? Where the Torah was brought and these people were to recite from the passage that pertained to fornication. So the rabbi, he just blocked it off. He blocked it off. One ex-rabbi that became a Muslim, Abdullah bin Salam, he said, just lift your hand. Just lift your hand, take your hand. And the verse of stoning to death was there in that Torah. So it's a law of all the divine scriptures. The Torah has got it, the Injil, Bible, Last Testament, it's got it as well, same thing. So then why must we feel ashamed about our Kitab? No, you mustn't. You must feel clear about it. You must feel strong about it. In Islam, the criminal is punished. And he's punished in public. Right? And then the whole public lives in peace. Right? And the Western system is, we will give him a break, we'll give him a chance. The criminal is given a chance, but to the advantage of the criminal, the whole world lives in fear. Now you've got burglar guards, you've got a patrol, you've got a security system. You still don't feel secure within your home. Last night, some brother was telling me that now in our town, thieves are coming from the roof. Now how are you going to do? How are you going to cover it up? Coming, ransack the whole shop, or they come from the roof. And they know how to block the alarm system, how to block the camera, they know how to do this, they get into it. So you've showed a little bit of compassion to the thief, and then you are imprisoned. The other way is you imprison him, kill him, punish him. You set an example for one, but millions are living in peace. And here you show compassion to the thief, and millions are living in misery. And we talk like this because it didn't happen to one of us, or to the people that are immediately connected to us. It happens to your child, to your father. How will you feel? And you see the picture of his gruesome body lying before you as a result of theft. What happens to you? So kill these people. You'll use all the type of languages. See? So Islam is not just, is not an emotional religion. It's a religion that is got a lot of rationale, understanding, composed, calm, and it weathered the test of time. Any given zamana and era, it weathered that storm. It stood. We're talking of Abdullah bin Salam, and we say that Islam is not a religion of convenience. It's not a religion of convenience. In the past, this is what happened. People made the religion an element of convenience. Things are not working out here, so let's trim this. Let's adjust this. Let's trim this. The incident of fornication when it took place in the Bani Israel, and then they came to Rasulullah SAW to arbitrate this whole thing. What led them to arbitrate this? So you understand, if you understand the whole context, you'll appreciate this when I say convenience. What had happened in the Bani Israel is there was a case of fornication. So there were two popular families and tribes, the Banu Qurayza and the Banu Nazir. The Banu Nazir was a more honorable class, a higher class, and the Banu Qurayza was considered as a lower class. So if the Banu Nazir had committed a crime, then they would relax the punishment. For fornication, what they would do then they would blacken the person's face and they would parade him into the entire town. That would be the punishment for the Banu Nazir, because they were a higher class. And the Banu Qurayza, they were a lower class. When they were a lower class, they would insist, no, he must be stoned to death. So a different punishment for the poor and a different punishment for the wealthy. Now it happens in Western law today as well. You got the money, you got the influence, then you can call the shots in the law, in anything. Now the affirmative action, if you are a black, then you can call the shots. In the law also you can call it. I was asking an ex-student here, some 5 years ago, qualified here, COSA. So ask him, how do you go to work? I said, I go by car. You got a license, no? Then they catch you, say, yeah. So what happens then? So now I pay them 50 rands, go to court, pay 50 rands, I'm black, so it's all right. The affirmative action works in the law as well. So there's no system. When you leave out Islam, it's just a an article of convenience. But just that these cases don't come before you, so you don't understand it. You don't see it. It's very well codified. In the books it looks very well. But how it's being implemented is a different thing. So anyway, the higher class, there's a different law. For the lower class, there's a different law. Now when Rasulullah had come into Medina Munawara, the Banu Qurayza, that was considered as the lower class, they objected. They said, it can't be. If it is that our man must be stoned to death, then your man also committed the crime. He must also be stoned to death. If it is, then it must go across the board. There can't be two different laws for a lower class and for a higher class. We are human, you are human. If this law is being implemented for us, then it must be implemented for you as well. See convenience. In Islam they tried to do this, but Allah Ta'ala had sent for Muslims, he had sent a revivalist to guard and to see that the systems are in order. Anybody is going, he's going out of the path, he's brought back. Don't you see, there's a small masjid and everybody shouts out, ulama will shout out and try and bring the thing back to cause. There's a problem, they'll shout out and they'll bring the thing back to cause. So this is the divine protection. That you won't go totally astray. You may make a mistake here and there, but you won't go totally astray. So I was talking about the Mughal era, you know, and one woman was guilty for fornication. So there is a law. There is a law that says that idra'u al-hudud bi-shubhat. When there is some doubt. On account of a doubt, then you mustn't implement the law. You will give the guilty person the benefit of the doubt. As you say, you give him the benefit of the doubt. It's a doubt now. Because of the doubt, you give him the benefit. So this woman is caused, she's charged. So she's running helter-skelter. In a few days' time, I'll be stoned to death. What do I do? So you, in every zaman, you'll get this as well. You'll get the learned that are bent on evil, and those that are straight, like you call ulama-i-su. So you'll get that in every profession, you'll get those that are quacks, those that are not qualified, half qualified, you'll get all these things happening. Those that are there just for the money. Don't you see now, in the medical field, and they selling kidneys and all that, don't you see that, don't you hear about that? So all these things happen everywhere, whether it is ulama, whether it is medicine, whether it is in India, about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, big building, very big building in Bandrander, that thing collapsed. So they went and inspected it after the thing collapsed because it resulted in the death of several people. So they had to make an inventory on the whole thing, that how what happened. They went and read the whole plans and they saw that the foundation wasn't right. Where the foundation had to be about 15 meters, they put the foundation at 5 meters, came a flood and the whole thing collapsed. It resulted in the death of so many people. So in every field you will have this. You must find it. And I show you a consistent pattern, how you follow people. So she went to one of those type of, this type of alims. Right. The alim said, all right, you make a plan for me, see me right, 2 grands, and we'll make it grand for you, we'll make it work out for you. So, or she says, all right, it's my life now. I'll give all my jewelry, but it's my life. So take this, take the 2 grand, but make a plan for me. Right. When you go to court, what you must say, that I was listening to one bayan, you see. I was listening to one bayan. In the bayan, they said, Khabiso, tum zina karte ho. Agar ek bas na ho, to do le lo. Agar do bas na ho, to teen le lo. Agar teen bas na ho, to 4 le lo. Lekin zina ko mat karo. Stupid people, you're committing zina. If one is not sufficient, then take 2. 2 is not sufficient, take 3. 3 is not sufficient, take 4. She went and related the whole thing in court. They said, Arey, but Tamiz, this is not for you, it's for a man. But they threw the case out because it was a doubt. She thought it was applicable to her. They threw the case out. You understand? See how this thing, convenience. Acts of convenience. Wait, it's convenient to you, turn the law around. See, so this is what happens when we don't follow our elders, great people, etc., then either we will not understand the context or the religion becomes a tool of convenience. that we'll just adjust, we'll just moderate, we'll just distort that religion to our convenience. I explained some days back as well that one pastor's son, he tells me himself, we are fourth generation Christians, fourth or fifth generation. Not only Christians, but we had pastors in four generations. First, second, third, fourth. Very, very wealthy. Right? Very wealthy, except Islam. So you become curious, anybody accepts Islam, especially coming from that stock now. But now what interested you in Islam? He says, no, our religion is a religion of convenience. We go and complain, then the complaint is taken to the Pope. The Pope then rules, all right, gay is all permissible. All right. Christianity all was taboo. And then now abortion, now that's permissible. Why are you going to complain? The complaint goes up. When it goes up there, then they say, all right, stop. So I said, if this is the thing of convenience, then this is a man-made thing. It's not divine. When it's not divine, then what's the need of following? Let's rather follow our own thing then. So man needs to have a religion. He needs to have a religion. He needs to have something, a pillar of support that is divine, immutable, can't be changed under any circumstances. It must be straight. If it was like this 100 years ago, it's 100 years later, it's the same. So that's religion. See? So Allah has given this protection to Islam. Inna nahnu nazzalna dhikr wa inna lahu lahafizun. Allah Pak says it, that this whole system, Allah Ta'ala has sent it down. And when we have sent it down, then we are its guardians. So nobody can mutilate it. Therefore you'll find now, a simple illustration, simple example. The Imam of the Haram, he's here. And he makes a mistake in namaz. A 10-year-old child can correct him. Put him back onto the course. Imam sir, you're wrong. He got the right to do it. See, anybody is going off the course according to your capacity, according to your understanding, you got the right. Islam gives you that right. You go and correct him, rectify him. You come to the masjid or somewhere, and you find a person performing namaz. He's a great buzruq, great wali, and he's performing namaz in the opposite direction. But Hazrat, as great as you are, but your direction is off, turn this way. Don't you do that. No, that's the permission Allah Pak has given. And nobody can change it. Nobody. All ulama, everybody wants to change the system. They can't change the system. They can't. Five namazes in the day, can you make it into four? With consensus? Can't. It's five, it's five. They tried to do it in Egypt now, 3 years ago. But they failed. Some people tried to say, no, we're a very busy schedule. So we'll only have to have two namazes or three namazes in the day. They started it off. And it failed after a day or 2 days or a month or something, then it just collapsed. So Islam is that. It's that immutable system of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You can't change. It's Allah ta'ala. If you go distorted, you'll get distorted. You'll get smashed down. But that thing will remain. Islam will still remain. So you see, this is that article that we are reading now about our elders. And this is why we talk so highly about them. Because they preserved the deen. They preserved it in its pure form. They didn't let it mutilate. They didn't let it change. Change the circumstances, whatever else. But they didn't allow it to change. This was our ulama, our Buzugana deen, our mashayikh. Under all situations, they preserved it. They preserved the purity. They preserved the pristine system that was there. They kept it right till this day. They kept it like that. They didn't allow it to change. Allah Ta'ala filled the graves with nur. Allah Ta'ala allow us also to follow in their footsteps. Therefore, I say we quote them. We understand the hadith through them. We understand the Quran Sharif through them. So therefore we quote them. The Quran Sharif also, we understand it through them. The understanding the verse in the right context, we understand it from them. Mawlana Habibur Rahman Sahib was the principal of Darul Uloom Deoband. He's got up about 2 o'clock in the morning or after Isha, and he went to recite some Quran Sharif. So he went to recite some Quran Sharif and he came across the verse. لا تزير وازرة وزر أخرى وأن ليس للإنسان إلا ما سعى. وَأَلْ لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. That's the verse he came across. That man shall only enjoy that which he worked for. That's the moralist translation. You will only get that what you worked for. وَأَلَّيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. And he came across that verse, وَأَلَّيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. Now, he came into a confusion. He's an alim, but he went into a confusion. Now, you're talking of an alim that was about 140 years ago. 140 years ago, Habib Rahman Sahib. Now it's late at night, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, after Isha. And this verse flashed in his mind, but he's in a quandary now, that man shall only receive that which he worked for, which he strived for. Because there are other contradictory facts that are coming before him. Right? Someone dies, don't we make dua maghfirat for him? Don't we make salatul janaza for him? What is salatul janaza? We're making dua on behalf of the deceased. But what is this verse saying? This verse is saying something different, that the man shall only enjoy that which he worked for. On the one end, you got the verse, he'll only receive that which he worked for. Here, you are making dua a maghfirat for that person that passed away. So how come? How come? How do you reconcile the both? Now, this confusion came in his mind. He says, no, I can't be at ease. I need to go to my elder and find out exactly what is the context of this verse. How does it apply? How does it work? And I don't want to pass a night with a doubt in my mind. Say if I die, and I'm dying with a doubt, so now my conscience is not clear. I need to go and clear my mind. What is the exact explanation of this verse? See? So he set out at night. Night. Those days now, there's no proper roads from Deoband right till Gangu, approximately 30 k's. Right? On foot. And he just reached Gangu at around Tahajjud time. While I was just doing his wuzu, he got in the right time. This is a problem. I came across this verse here, and I don't seem to understand the correct application of this verse. What's the verse? وَأَلَّيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. Man shall only enjoy that which he has strived for. So Mawla says, are the meaning of it is this, that on the day of Qiyamah, one person's iman, person who's got iman, right? And there's another person who doesn't have iman. You've got iman, and the other person doesn't have iman, right? So, your iman, with your iman, you cannot benefit the one that has got no iman. Understand? أَلَّيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. In other words, the one that has got iman, he can't benefit the one that has got no iman. You understand? He died as a kafir, you died as a mu'min. So, in spite of your friendship and affinity and whatever else, but you want to be of any assistance to him, you can't be of any assistance. And so that now, this is the meaning of the verse. It doesn't mean that you can't help across the board. Like I said now, someone is late, so you make dua maghfirat for him. Don't you make salatul janaza for him. Don't you make isal salab for him. So all these things are helping the deceased. But now this isal salab, dua maghfirat is for a believer or a non-believer. It's a believer. So after belief, then you can assist in this way through dua maghfirat, isal salab, etc. You can assist. But minus the belief, you can't be of any assistance. So this is the one explanation. The second explanation, with respect to obligations, one cannot be of benefit to the other. Like, he is performing Zohar Namaz, I can't tell him, bhai, read my Zohar Namaz also. He is performing the Roza of Ramadan, I can't tell you, oh, my Roza also, you will discharge my Roza as well. You will do your own Roza, I'll do my own. So I can't benefit you in obligations. I can't benefit you in iman. In other things I can benefit, but in obligations I can't. In iman I can't. So he sighed with relief. I was really perturbed, very, very perturbed. I didn't know the application of this verse. But you see, the excitement it brought in him when he didn't know about it, the grief, the pain, and the worry, and the concern that brought in, that came in him, when he wasn't sure of the application. Now, you'll only appreciate this when you understand that zamana. That zamana, they didn't have so many kitabs. They didn't have that type of tafsirs. And people, even ulama had very few kitabs, right? So they knew the work, but they didn't have so many illustrations, so many commentaries, etc. They're not so easily available. Now it's so easily available. So you just pick up a kitab and you see it straight, right? But these kitabs were not available at that time, 150 years ago. See? So he says, now I can't die in a state of doubt. My mind is unclear, I can't die like this. I don't know if death can just strike now and I die in a state of doubt. I'll go straight now, in spite of the peril of the path, midnight, going through the jungle, no roads, proper roads. But I'll go and I'll clear my mind and I'll come back. So these are some glimpses from the lives of our elders. Some glimpses. We understand who these people were. We understand the type of thinking they had. We understand the type of sacrifices that they made, the outlook in life. You must understand these things here. The bottom line in them, one common theme in them was humility. If you look at all these mashayikh that belong to the right silsilas, to the right chains, right? One very common line in them all was the line of humility. Wherever you go and you pick up anybody's biography and you see what was the common line, what was the common theme? The common theme in all of them was humility. You've got humility. Humility is like preparing the field, you see. You prepare the field, then you can sow any type of seed that you want. But the field is not prepared and you want to sow seeds, then it's a wasted effort, isn't it? Wasted. Seed is, the ground is not right and you want to plant your seeds there. It's wasted. So the humility is like softening the soil. You're softening the soil, you're preparing the soil, you're applying the right type of fertilizers, etc. Now you sow the seed, now it will germinate. But minus that, the soil is hard, it's rocky, there's bush in that, and you're planting your seeds there by wasting your money, wasting your effort, go and do something else in life. Won't you see that? So this was a common theme in their lives. You look at their lives, just check their biography, and the very, very common thing, outstanding feature in their lives is this thing here of humility. And then it's not just in our elders, in all right through, anybody from the Imams and the Ulama and Sahaba Kiram downwards. Look at all of them, this is a common theme. Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayh, he's, I heard this from Hazaji rahmatullah alayh, and some kitabs also have caught this same incident. Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayh is proceeding to his house and he's accompanied by students, and his students are all leading people. The whole law system in that samana was run by his student, Abu Yusuf rahmatullah alayh. So you can imagine now what type of professional people they were. Qazi al-Quzat, the head of the law, all under his students. He refused to take that on, but his students thereafter went into it. Seeing the need, they went into it. Like, he's a man of that position. Like, you know, I would say, Minister of Law and Justice. So what a high position. So anyway, he's walking and with a whole entourage of his students and all that. One person accompanies him and he's hurling abuse, insulting him one way. Abu Hanifa rahmatullah is listening. His students are getting enraged. Abu Hanifa rahmatullah is not doing anything. And this man is insulting. He's going on and in public, in front of everybody. There's no change. Even the face, there's no facial change, nothing. As Abu Hanifa rahmatullah comes near his home, he has to take a turn. This man has to go straight. So Abu Hanifa rahmatullah stops. And he tells this person here, but you know what? Now I have to take a turn because here, this is my home, you see. Perhaps there are some sentiments left in your heart. You want to tell me something more. I will stop here for you and allow you to tell whatever you need to tell. Otherwise, I will go away and you will feel remorse in your heart. Okay, I need to tell him this also. I need to tell him this also, but he didn't give me a chance to say it. You see that humility. They don't feel much. They don't feel anything about criticism and all. They don't feel much about it. You see how the thinking is. Here also, he is paying consideration for that person. That person mustn't feel bad. He mustn't feel bad. Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayh is walking on street, you see. And one person sees Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayh and he escapes. So Abu Hanifa pursues him, gets, what happened, why you ran away? no, you lent me 10,000 dirhams. 10,000 dirhams, now if you just see today's currency, it's approximately 150,000 rands. You know, if you equal it to the zakat, isab, etc., that's the equivalent approximate, 150,000 rands. And I haven't paid you on time, you see. I haven't paid you yet, and I'm procrastinating, so I'm feeling very embarrassed to see you, therefore I ran away. So Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah told him, oh, is that the thing that is distancing you from me? What? Is that the thing that is distancing you from me? Then it's maaf, I waive it off completely. I don't want my friendship to be broken off because of these type of things. Is this the thing that is distancing you from me? So I waive it off completely. Then after a minute, then he tells this person again, said, "But you know what? I ask you for a maaf. I ask you for an apology." Now he's turning the whole thing around. See how he's thinking. How he's thinking, Abu Hanifa is thinking. He says, Abu Hanifa rahmatullah says, "You know, I need to ask you for an apology. Why? I could have maafed you before this. I could have maafed you before this. Had I only maafed you before this, then you wouldn't have gone through this agony. Now, because I didn't make you maaf, then you had to go through this agony and this pain here. I didn't pay the man here. And you felt hurt within yourself. Mentally you felt hurt. So had I made you maaf before this, then you wouldn't have gone through this mental agony and trauma. So I ask you for an apology." You see this way of thinking and understanding, reasoning, this type of humility. You talk of Abu Hanifa rahmatullah. Now come to the Sahaba ikram, Khulafa'i Rashidin. Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu. The same line, the same common theme of humility. One person insults Abu Hanifa, Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. Insults him, abuses him, whatever else. So Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu replies to him, "By, if I am wrong, may Allah Ta'ala make me maaf. By the same token, but if you are wrong, may Allah Ta'ala make you maaf." Now, is there anything else that can be added to this? Is there anything else that can be added? Can't be. It can be only one of two situations. I am wrong or you are wrong. I am wrong, may Allah Ta'ala make me maaf. For whatever wrong I have done. And it's possible, it's likely that you are wrong. If you are wrong, may Allah Ta'ala make you maaf. The whole chapter is ended, closed. We didn't entertain the chapter any longer. It's closed, complete. So you see this aspect of humility, humility and how they humble themselves. So therefore, you come to the khanqa generally, this type of a gathering, see, we need to understand, is not just making namaz and ibadat, etc. That's why some brothers was asking some maslas and all, said, "By one thing at a time, one thing at a time. Now just focus on your rectification, on your spiritual correction. Now you're going to think about Arabic and Buddhist and whatever else, and Quran Sharif, Tarjama, whatever else. So you're going to be missing out your focus. Focus is your rectification. What's my weakness? Where's my weakness? How must I correct myself? Now look at that. Don't let your mind wander in other things. See, Shaitan's way of misleading is, أَتَسْتَبْدِلُونَ الَّذِي هُوَ أَدْنَى بِالَّذِي هُوَ خِيرٌ. He will take you from higher values to lower values. Now he knows now this person is in Islam now. Let me just shift the focus. When I want to shift the focus, then you get confused. A simple example, person is doing Quran Sharif, he's becoming Hafiz now, right? So it's easy for the shaitan to play around with this child. He'll just shift the focus. It's, you know, hey, you're becoming Hafiz now, you know, 13, 14 years of age. Now he heard one Kalguzari in the masjid, that Jamaat went to Japan. So many people, they converted and they brought them, they made them Muslims. Now, this child's mind, the focus has shifted. When the focus has shifted, said, hey, I'm sitting here learning Quran Sharif here. They got so many people, Muslims. Imagine now, his mind is beginning to work with him. They'll be Muslims, their wives will be Muslims, their children will be Muslims. And hundreds of people will accept Islam. So much more so. Hey, I need to go there. In Jamaat, I can become Hafiz there. Will the focus be shifted or not? And it's so easy, so simple. The focus is shifted, he's lost. Na idhar ka raha, na udhar ka raha. He's not going right this way, he's not going right that way. Then when you're in Jamaat now Shaitan plays with you again. Now you go in Jamaat now and you see this Mawlana gives such a beautiful talk and oration. So many people are getting impressed. Right? Now you're already 35, 40 and you're strong in the work. More or less you know your faras, you know your wajibat, sunnat, etc. You know everything is going on well. So now the Shaitan is going to play with you and say, you know, you're sitting here going Jamaat and all, we're talking about 6 points. You'd rather go and become a Mawlana and you'll be able to deliver talks, hundreds of people will be able to benefit from you. So he'll play you, know, you're not on this side, you're not on that side. You can't concentrate here, you can't concentrate. Whilst you are there, Shaitan puts you onto this side. Whilst you're this side, then he puts you on that side. See? So therefore they say, when you're in this type of environment, remain calm. As you want to say, words with sukoon or sukoot. Sukoon or sukoot. Remain silent and remain calm as well. In other words, mentally remain calm. Don't get excited. Hey, let's go and do this. Go and do this. Go and do this. Just freak out. Impulsive. Don't do that. Just remain calm and remain quiet. Everything will happen in its time. Then you will get a time afterwards. Now, there is a problem, you can ask, all right, what do I do here? What do I do here? But now when you have given your time, just for this Islam and Reformation, not many days. You know, actually, this Islam and Reformation is such an important thing in your lives that right till ila akhiri nafasil hayat, right till the last breath in your body, you have to be concerned about your Islam. Right till the last breath. Because this is your Jannat and Jahannam. Right? Dependent on your Islam, what level of Islam you have done, that's your Jannat and your Jahannam. So you have to be concerned about it right till the end. And we have given such a short period, and that also then mix up this Maslaya and that Maslaya and whatever else. Yes, if it relates to you directly, I'm reading my Namaz now, I don't know if my Namaz is right or not right. I missed out the Surah or whatever else. Directly, immediately at that time it relates to you, then you ask. But otherwise, now leave it at some other time, go and ask about it some other time. Don't make this now. And sometimes it gets you worried as well. Now, all the time you're not asking. Now suddenly in Etikaf now, then all the wasas are coming. You know, like you have a headache. So all the time you didn't ask the doctor. Right? Now after 1-2 years you see one doctor say, Doctor Sahib, I got a chronic headache. But if it was a real headache, you would have seen a doctor straight away. Right? That was a real headache. But now you saw the doctor, so you got a headache now. But a chronic headache, I want some ilaj and treatment. You see how he confuses you. أَتَسْتَبْدِلُونَ الَّذِي هُوَ أَدْنَى بِالَّذِي هُوَ خَيْرٍ. That from the superior, Shaitan brings you to the inferior things. From the higher, he brings you lower. So don't get confused. Just remain one thing. And then afterwards, when the time is over now, you've seen yourself. You see, when you put yourself into all these maslas, now you're not looking at yourself. You aren't looking at your own weaknesses. My weakness, I need to rectify. I need to correct this. My mind is corrupt. My mind is straying away. I've got evil thoughts about people. I've got malicious intent. I've got pride in me. I've got jealousy in me. I've got greed in me. I want my father's estate all to come to me, not to my sisters. I want everything to work out for me, not for them. Everything must work out for me only. See, I got malicious intent. Now I must correct myself. How must I correct myself? My eyes are not right. My tongue is not right. I just speak without verifying information. My ears are not right. So now, how must I correct myself? So you got that concern. You consume with this fikr. See? So within this period, then when you come out of this short stay, then you got some direction. Otherwise, now you're doing 101 things at the same time. And therefore, they say, talabul kul futul kul. Okay, you're trying to get everything, then you lose everything out also. You can take so much. Take how much? You can manage now. Then afterwards, there's another period again. You'll get inshallah. But take so much that you can manage and you can chew, you can digest. More than what you can digest, you are taking. Really, you'll get an indigestion. You're taking more than what you can digest. So, Hazratji's words, see, these old people's words, simple words. But when the more I reflect, the more I find an enjoyment, a new meaning, new dimension is coming out all the time. It's so simple, he explained it, sukut and so. Remain quiet. And remain calm, mentally remain calm. Don't stress your mind. I have to do this and I need to ask this maslaya and get this right and get that right. Just remain calm and remain silent. Don't talk. Now you're not talking and you're remaining silent. Now all your masalas are coming up. I got this masala. My heart is not right. My magad is not right. My tongue is not right. I got all these masalas. I need to rectify these masalas. Otherwise, you'll become like our daily news, you know. Our daily news is got figure for the whole world. But for South Africa, what's happening in Malagasy, people are living in shacks and all that, they got no homes and all that. I'm worried about that. Yeah, what's happening in America, there's a bomb here, that, whatever else, they're worried about that. You become like a daily news. Worried about the whole world, but yourself. Not worried about yourself. But you came alone to this world, you go alone, so you make your fikr first. Okay, maine apni akhirat ki kya tayyari ki? Then you worry about other things. Your own fikr you make first. In Jamaat also they tell you, when you're going out, apni islah ke liye. Don't they tell you? You go for your own islah, go for your own reformation. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. So we'll discuss some of the adab of namaz. That before performing salah, one should ensure that he is in a state of taharat, he has wudu. And in the place where he's performing salah, that also needs to be clean and park. And the clothing that a person wears, that also should be clean and park. And you should ensure that the clothing is not tight-fitting, that where the shape of the body is revealed. And nor should the clothing be so thin and flimsy that the satr and the private area can be seen through the clothing. Because at times when it is too tight-fitting, or when it is too thin and flimsy, then the salah will be regarded as invalid and a person will have to eventually repeat it. Then when starting the salah, one should face the qibla, make the intention for the namaz, whatever namaz you are reading, and then raise your hands to such an extent that the thumbs are parallel with the ears. And the palms of both hands will be facing towards the qibla, with the fingers also kept straight and kept in their natural position. The fingers won't be spread apart, nor will a person close his fingers, but rather the fingers will be kept naturally open, and then you will say the takbir, Allahu Akbar. And when standing, both the feet will be kept apart, approximately space of four fingers, and you will keep your gaze fixed to the place of sajda, in the qiyam, in the standing posture. After saying the takbir, Allahu Akbar, you will lower both the hands, placing the right hand over the left hand and forming a ring with the small finger and the thumb of the right hand around the wrist of the left hand, and keeping the remaining three fingers over the forearm, and the hands will be placed below the navel. Then you will start off the salah by reciting the thana subhanakallahumma bihamdika, followed by a'udhu bismillah and then surah fatiha. However, as far as the thana is concerned, then this will be recited by every musalli, whether it is the imam, whether it is the muqtadi, the one following the imam, whether it is the munfarid, the one performing salah alone. But as far as a'udhu bismillah and the qirat and the rest of the tilawat that is to follow, then the person who is following the imam, he will not recite anything. In fact, it is makruh for him to recite anything after the thana, after he recites subhanakallahumma. Rather, it will only be the imam and the person who is reading individually. For them, they will have to read A'udhu, Bismillah, and Surah Fatiha. And upon the completion of Surah Fatiha, you will say Ameen softly, and then you will recite whatever qirat is to follow. If it is a farz namaz, then they are masnoon qirat that a person will recite, then a person should try to adhere to this in the farz namaz. In the fajr and zuhr salah, the masnoon qirat is to recite from the Tiwale Mufassal. Tiwale Mufassal are those surahs, from Surah Hujurat in the 26th para till Surah Idha Sama'un Shaqqat in the 30th para. And in Asr and Isha Salah, the Masnoon Qirat is to recite from Surah Buruj till end of Surah Qadr. And for the Maghrib Salah, the Masnoon Qirat is from Surah Bayyina, Lam Yakuni Ladina, till the end. Once you are complete with the Qirat, you will then proceed to Ruku, saying the Takbir. And when saying the takbir, that is the takbir for moving from one posture to the other, you will begin the takbir as soon as you start moving towards the next posture, and you will terminate the takbir once you reach that posture. So you will not start bending and only after that recite the takbir. But as soon as you start bending, that is when you will start saying Allahu Akbar, and you will only finish it once you reach the next posture. Then in ruku, one should ensure that the head and back are kept in a straight line. The elbows should not be bent, but rather they should be kept straight. And the shin, that is the knee downwards, that should also be kept in a straight line. So when making ruku, one should ensure that the shin that is kept straight, is not kept back. Then the elbows should also be kept straight, and the head and the back should be kept in a straight line. And also, one should try to not bend the knees too much. That is, the thigh should not be kept pushed right back, but as far as possible, one should try to also keep the thigh as far as possible in line with the shin, although it cannot come totally in line and totally straight.
Simple way is, you push yourself a little bit further, you will get the thigh and the shin straight. Otherwise, what will happen? You will get the thigh slightly bent. Someone will bend it more, and someone will bend it less. So if you push yourself in front, you will get the proper alignment. The thigh and the shin will come in line. Just push yourself a little bit more.
So in ruku, the shin will be kept straight, and you will push yourself forward.
Just as you push yourself, now the thigh and the shin come straight.
And then you will grasp the knees with both hands firmly, and the fingers will be kept spread apart. And in ruku, you will keep your gaze fixed towards your feet. And you will recite the tasbih, Subhana Rabbi al-Azim, a minimum of 3 times or any other odd number of times. Then once you are complete with the tasbih, you will say, Sami Allahu liman hamida, and come up into the posture of Quma, and then you will follow it by reciting Rabbana wa lakal hamd. And again over here, as far as Sami Allahu liman hamida, then this will be recited by the imam and the person reading namaz individually. As far as the one who is following the imam, he will not recite Sami Allahu liman hamida, but rather when he comes up after following the imam, he will only read Rabbana wa lakal hamd. And the person who is reading namaz alone individually, he will also read Rabbana wa lakal hamd. Then you will remain standing in the posture of Quma, Ta'adil Arkan, that is, until your body is at a complete ease, and then only should you proceed to Sajda. A person should not rush and move into Sajda, but rather only once the body is at ease, then only should you go into Sajda. And again, when saying the Takbir, from the standing posture to go down to Sajda, you will start off the Takbir as soon as you start bending, and you will only end it off once you reach the posture of Sajda. And when going down, first the knees will touch the ground, then the hands, then the nose, and lastly the forehead. And you should try to keep the back straight whilst going down, and the hands will be kept on the knees. So when a person goes down, he will start off the takbir and say, Allahu Akbar. And first the knees will touch, then the hands, and then the nose, and lastly the forehead. And in the sajda posture, both the hands, or you see the palms, will be kept in line with the ears, and the fingers of both the hands will be kept tightly closed, facing towards the Qibla. Then the elbows will be kept off the ground. Person should not lean on the ground, and the arms will be kept away from the sides. So in sajda, the elbows will be kept away, as well as the arms will be kept away from the sides. However, in jamaat namaz, since there are people on either side, person should not push his hands too much out, and thus cause taklif to other musallis, but rather to the bare minimum without causing any taklif to others. And then in sajda, you will fix your gaze towards your nose and recite the tasbih, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la, thrice. And then you should also keep a gap between your stomach and thigh. A person shouldn't crouch himself in the posture of sajda, but rather he should keep a gap. And in sajda, both the feet will be kept together with the heels of both the feet touching, and the toes of both the feet will be pushed against the ground, facing towards the Qibla. So in sajda, you will keep both the feet together, and in this manner you will make the sajda. And once you finish with the tasbih, you will say takbir and come up into the posture of jalsa. And when sitting in jalsa, you will fix your gaze. Firstly, you will place your hands on your thighs, and the tips of the hands, of the fingers, will be kept at the edge of the knees. And the fingers will be kept in the natural position. A person will not tightly close his fingers, nor will he spread them apart, but just normal position it will be kept. And you will fix your gaze to any area from the lower chest to the lap. And when sitting in the jalsa posture, you will sit on your left foot with the right foot kept erect, and the toes of both the feet will be facing towards the Qibla. So you will sit on your left foot in the Jalsa posture, and the right foot will be kept erect, and the toes of both the feet will be facing towards the Qibla. And in Jalsa again, once you come into the posture of Jalsa, you should not rush to go back into the second sajda, but rather you will sit with Ta'dil Arkan until the body is at your complete ease, and then only you should move to the second sajda. And then you will complete the sajda as normal, and once the sajda is complete, then you will say the takbir, Allahu Akbar, and come back up for the second rakat. And again, when coming back up, it will be the reverse as you had gone down. That is, first you will raise your head, then your hands, and then your knees, and then you will get up. And when getting up, if a person is healthy and fit, then it is makruh for that person to take any support from the ground. Rather, a person should just immediately get up. And when getting up again, the takbir should be said from the time you raise your head off the ground, and you should complete the takbir once you come into the standing posture. And then you will complete the second rakat as normal. And after getting out from the second sajda of the second rakat, you will then come into the posture of qa'da, and to recite at-tahiyyat. So if this is the, if you are reading a 4 or 3 rakat salah, then upon the completion of the at-tahiyyat, you will stand up to complete the remaining rakats. And if it is the final qa'da, then after the completion of the at-tahiyyat, you will recite the durood Ibrahim followed by the dua. And now in the qa'da posture, you will sit in the same manner as you had sat in jalsa. That is, you sitting or resting on your left foot, keeping your right foot erect, keeping your gaze focused to the area between the lower chest and the lap. And the hands will also be kept in the same manner, with the hands kept on the thighs, the tips of the fingers kept at the edge of the knees. And then when reciting at-tahiyyat and coming to the part of Ashhadu Allah ilaha, and at saying Allah ilaha, you will form a ring with the middle finger and the thumb of the right hand, together with raising the index finger. And the index finger will just be raised till it is straight facing towards the Qibla. And saying illallah, then you will lower the index finger. And then you will complete the qada by reciting durood Ibrahim and reciting any dua from the Quran or Hadith. But famously, or commonly, the dua that is normally read is Allahumma inni zalamtu nafsi zulban kathira wa Allahumma ghfirli wa liwalidayya. And upon completing the dua, then you will make salam first to the right and then to the left. And when making salam, you will turn to such an extent that if someone is sitting behind, you will be able to see your cheek. And you will fix your gaze to your shoulder when making salam. And as soon as you have finished with the salam on the right side, you will commence with the salam of the second salam, turning again to the left. And at the time of making salam, then you will make intention of making salam to all those that are, all the musallis on your right, as well as whether it is the musallis in the form of insan or the musallis in the form of jinnat, and to the malaika on your right. And if the imam is on your right hand side, you will also make niyat of making salam to him, and the same type of intention will be made when making salam to the left.